Hello, you're listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of PixelVerdict.com. Back from an extended over Christmas hiatus that, we decided to take some time off so that we could enjoy, you know, Christmas with our families and eggnog and stockings hung by the chimney with care, and hell, we were just playing video games. That's all we got a whole bunch of video games for Christmas, and we sat down and played them. Except for John. John got a new addition, and I'd just like to say before we get into anything else, congratulations, Mr. Mercer, on the birth of healthy young Zangief Mercer.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, I didn't get to actually call him Zangief.
Well, we will call him Zangief.
Yeah, well, that the way I keep telling everyone, Jacob is his slave name.
Well, you know, it's a Pixel Verdict tradition that whenever any of our writers have children, we name them after Street Fighter characters and refer to them only by their given Street Fighter name, and then said people
Little Chun-Li Jasper Schlager.
Yeah, who must be. She's probably in high school by now. It's been so long since I've talked to Eric.
I know, and I don't know how little Cammy Johnson's doing.
Dave's presence is a little more frequent, but you know, I think it kind of goes with the territory that, you know, once children are born, people drop off the radar. So, you know, I hope that doesn't happen to you, but if you do enter stealth mode, I understand.
You know. Oh, no.
I'll start doing this podcast by myself. Maybe I'll have a phone-in show. Maybe it can be like open line.
Only for video games.
Only for video game nerds.
You know what the video game nerd population is like in this city?
It's pretty big.
You don't want to do that. I've met some of these people.
We are some of these people.
Yeah, I like to consider myself in the upper echelon. I'm sitting here with my glass of $10 German wine and.
Oh,
because that's all I can afford with diapers and baby formula now on the budget.
I understand.
Well, I'll have to settle for Black Tower.
You'll have to drink your Black Tower and continue to play your DC Universe Online.
Oh God, don't even start with that DC Universe Online.
So since we've broached the topic of DC Universe Online, by the way, I should also mention, I guess, that this is episode 89 for anybody who's still keeping count. I'm not, so you know why should you. But yeah, we'll kick it off. You know, John, what have you been playing?
Well, for the past week, DC Universe Online.
Yeah.
Yeah. But honestly, to tell you the truth, I'm not much of an MMO fan, and really playing it felt more like you know my legal duty. Like I had to play it because I was reviewing it.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, but you know, I'm really not much of an MMO fan, and I don't understand the logic behind paying $60 for a game and then paying $15 every month to play it.
It is a strange and twisted logic that we, the MMO players of the world, have to adhere to, but you know.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of game there, just like World of Warcraft, but it's like a collection of little tiny games. You know, there's not really enough meat to anything to really catch your attention for long. It's, you know, Batman tells me to go down to the Gotham dock and do 15 of this task, and then.
And when Batman tells you to do something,
you do it.
You do it.
Like, the only things I'm really enjoying is, you know, I've got two characters made. I've got a hero named Master Burner, and I've Master Burner is a fire wielding speedster. He runs really fast and throws fire out of his fists. And I have got an illusionist named Weird Beard.
Weird Beard.
And he's got the big hood and the giant giant sniper goggles on, so he looks like Johnny Depp from Sleepy Hollow.
Great.
The big magnifying sniper lens coming off of one eye, and a great big giant like Green Arrow beard.
Awesome.
Coming up through the bottom, so I named him, and since he makes people hallucinate, I called him Weird Beard. So that's two characters named after stoner rock songs. Yeah. I was pretty proud of that. But the best bit with Weird Beard is, as soon as I landed in Gotham City, they told me that if by any chance you should encounter, and not Batman, if you should encounter the Batman, you do what the rest of us do and run.
Ah. So Weird Beard's a bad guy.
Weird Beard is a bad guy.
Right on.
Unfortunately, my original name, I wanted to make like an evil version of the Flash and call him Killstreak, but that name was taken.
Aww. I thought the evil version of the Flash was called Professor Zoom.
Yeah, I always thought it was just like anti-Flash or reverse Flash.
I think it's Professor Zoom.
Professor Zoom.
Man, DC comics suck.
And that's something I was thinking about.
Listen to you. Killstreak, Weird Beard, Master Burner. These aren't DC Comics characters. These are Marvel characters, John.
Exactly. And when I was playing it, as I was running around the streets of Metropolis, all I could think of was, this would be a whole hell of a lot cooler if I could look up and see Spider-Man swinging over my head.
Well, I mean, this is the whole thing about... I don't even want to get into the dichotomy between Marvel and DC. Let's just say Marvel is cool, DC is chess club.
Marvel is what us rebels read in high school.
Yeah, Marvel is what us stoner hippie pothead cruising around in our Reliant K's listening to Metallica and Megadeth read, while DC is what the chess club and the music room geeks read.
Exactly.
Yeah. So hear that, Woolridge, if you're out there listening. I know you like your Green Lantern. Suck it, pansy.
Yeah, doesn't Woolridge also have like a Moon Knight comic on his wall?
Hey. That's Marvel.
No, but,
don't okay. Hey, offsides.
You lay off the Moon Knight.
Offsides, John Mercer. Offsides.
Actually, what was that really, really weird Baldur's Gate style Marvel game we were playing a few years ago? Ultimate Alliance.
Marvel sucked a tooth on Xbox.
Yeah, no, but I can just remember you and I had the team of Moon Knight and Luke Cage.
Now, if that ain't a match made in heaven, I don't know what is.
An ebony. And ivory.
Oh.
But no, listen, DC Universe. If you're a fan of MMOs, just for the combat alone, especially players who like to go it solo, leave World of Warcraft. Give this one a try. It's a lot more fun in combat sense. If you're not a fan of MMOs, it doesn't do anything new to bring you in. You know, it's all the familiar trappings, just given new names.
So I'll pass then.
Yeah.
I have been, I rediscovered my love of online military first-person shooters that aren't called Call of Duty. And I did delve rather significantly into Medal of Honor's multiplayer for the first time. And
how was the mouth?
Medal of Honor's multiplayer is actually freaking awesome. It is really damn good. It is amazingly well-structured. It looks great. It plays great.
Now, this was put together by the boys at
DICE. Yeah, this was the Digital Illusions. These guys are, well, I mean, you know, Battlefield and all that stuff. So, you know, these guys know their doo-doo when it comes to online multiplayer. But, you know, like, my initial impression at launch, and I mean, from what I understand, the game's been patched to hell and gone since it was released anyway. But at launch, I played a little bit of the multiplayer, and it kind of felt like, you know, the bastard offspring of Call of Duty and Battlefield Bad Company. But
yeah.
It has evolved, it has changed, and it really has this unique feel that's entirely its own. And I grabbed a controller, I got in with a few guys, a few of my buddies, and I must say, like, we leveled up pretty quick. I got, I think, my rifleman class up to level 4 or 5 in one go, and I was having a ball. I was having a riot. It's not like it's a tough multiplayer game. It doesn't suffer fools. You know, you can't really get away with just the run-and-gun Call of Duty style, because... It seems like as soon as you're spotted, a single bullet can end your life in a hurry, which is great. I love
it. So, circle strafing doesn't work, and cook those grenades, ladies.
Yeah, cook those grenades. And the other side of it, of course, is being built on DICE's Frostbite engine. It, like, you don't feel like a skateboard with a machine gun.
No.
So, you know, it doesn't feel like you're playing Tony Hawk's anti-insurgent skateboarding mayhem, you know?
Call of Guitar Hawk.
Call of something. But, you know, it's... It feels like an evolved, you know, multiplayer first-person shooter, whereas Call of Duty, I mean, Black Ops still felt like Call of Duty. You know, it's kind of getting stagnant, it's gotten stale, you know, move on. But, I gotta say, Medal of Honor, fantastic, super 2 thumbs up for the multiplayer. And I also did get back into Bad Company 2, and I did download the Battlefield Vietnam expansion for Bad Company 2, and that is also fantastic.
I did notice something, though, getting back on the time when you were saying the Black Ops just felt like Call of Duty.
Yep.
This was, I believe, now it wasn't really a marked downfall. You know, there wasn't a huge margin, But I did notice that from a lot of the major review sites and a lot of the gaming mags, Black Ops didn't score as crazily well as the two Modern Warfare games did.
Yeah, and I don't know. Like, I think that's justified. I mean, now me personally, the single player game, based on the fact that they tried to do something cool with the plot, they get bonus points for me.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that coin, the fact that it felt like a throwback to not even Modern Warfare, but to Call of Duty 3, in terms of how it felt, like how the controls felt, I take points away for that.
But no, I was the exact same way, man. It seemed every level they were throwing something cool at you to keep your attention.
Yeah, like every level was epic, you know? Like,
but I did notice that a lot of the time you didn't actually, you had to kill like three people in the level yourself to get it to move forward.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of the times, you know, the partners you'd be sent up there with could play the game for you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to turn this into another Call of Duty versus Battlefield Medal of Honor pacing match, another Activision versus EA pacing match, but, you know, I've flipped my coin. I've spent my time with both companies' offerings, and I land very, very, very firmly, squarely, feet ankle-deep in the mud on the EA side, and I gotta say, Medal of Honor and Battlefield Bad Company 2 both utterly, totally spanked the living shit out of Call of Duty Black Ops.
But that by no means means that our listeners can't say, you know, Steve is crazier than the shithouse rat, and have to give up their Call of Duty.
Oh, hey, you want to play Call of Duty, be my guest. You can play it.
You want to play baby's first-person shooter.
Yeah, go ahead. Go mad. I think a lot of it with Call of Duty, like a lot of the appeal is just the social aspect of it. It's become, you know, like World of Warcraft, it has become a social phenomenon. It's not even about whether it's a good game anymore. It's just this is what everybody's doing, so you have to be a part of it, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, you know, I've always been kind of antisocial when it comes to my online gaming. I play with friends. And my friends happen to be playing Medal of Honor and enjoying it, you know, so I just...
Well, same as me, man. Every time I play a game online, it's pretty much the same people I would, you know, we would have system linked an Xbox with.
Exactly, exactly. These are the same guys who were in our cramped little apartment on Halo Nights with two Xboxes networked, you know?
Yeah.
And naming our characters after, like, venereal diseases and stuff so that when it came up you were killed by... We all got a good hearty chuckle, you know?
Oh, my God. There needs to be a venereal disease called Mega Doomer.
But yeah, I've been into both of those. I am still very heavily invested in Two Worlds 2, and I'm still really enjoying that one. You know, I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. I keep waiting to hit, like, that wall of content and for the game to turn into just, like, a buggy, empty, addled mess. And it hasn't happened. At, like, hour 20 or 22, the game still is, you know, tight, really well constructed, really well executed, pretty much on every side. You know, it's a little more linear than Oblivion or the original Two Worlds, but it's still a really... I'm having a great time. I'm really...
Well, you know, that's not entirely a bad thing.
No, it's not. I mean, I love that about Arcania, that it was a more focused experience and stuff over the old Gothic games, which were these big, sprawling, you know, directionless... lose your life and soul to this vast expanse. But, you know, like Arcania was more of a trimmed-down, almost Fable-like experience, and while Two Worlds 2 doesn't quite go to that extreme, there is still a hint of exploration there. It is more, you know, like, it is more of a guided experience, and because of that, the narrative is a little more interesting, and the different quest threads, like, I just finished up a quest thread involving a criminal mastermind in one of the cities that they only know as Mirage, and, I mean, basically you're playing two sides between the leader of the Thieves Guild and the leader of the Town Watch, and you're trying to figure out the identity of this guy, Mirage, and you have to decide, you know, which of these factions are you going to side with, which of these guys are you going to give the identity to, you know, and there's no real clear-cut way to answer it, and there's no clear-cut way to find out who this guy is. You know, you just basically got to go through the quest line, make the right decisions with the contacts and that sort of thing. You can hit dead ends and stuff, and, like, there's a few red herrings thrown in there even, like, there's a few characters where I'm like, okay, this is definitely Mirage. No, wait, it isn't. You know, like that kind of thing. And it was, I mean, it was every bit as riveting as, you know, anything I've done in, you know, Fallout or Oblivion or whatever. You know, like it was every bit as well executed as that. And I mean, you know, in terms of overall quality, no, it doesn't quite reach Oblivion levels. But it is pretty damn close. It's, you know, it is a pretty amazing game. And
how much money and how many people?
I'm not even sure.
I guarantee you it was a fraction of Oblivion.
Yeah, well, I mean, for sure. Well, I mean, the original Two Worlds was, you know, I think something like 16 or 30 people and a budget of less than $1 million. So, you know, they didn't have much to work with. But, you know, Two Worlds 2, they definitely, you know, the success of Two Worlds, it sold well on PC. It sold really well on Xbox by their standards. And, I mean, like, what resources they made from that definitely got pumped back into the game. And it shows, you know, the multiplayer is awesome. Multiplayer is really fun. It's, I mean, I've gushed about it before. It's been a month and a half or so since we've gushed about Two Worlds 2, but, you know, there it is again. Two Worlds 2 is great. It is awesome. It comes out next week in North America. Everyone should buy it. We should all get online, and it would be a lot of fun. I guarantee you will. If you have any love in your heart whatsoever for an RPG, Two Worlds 2 online is going to be an enjoyable experience for you.
I just looked over my game shelf and realized I was playing something other than DC Universe.
Yeah.
I've changed so many diapers in the past few weeks, I forget what I do.
You were playing Muppet Babies, the video game?
No, I wasn't playing Muppet Babies, the video
game. Oh, okay.
No, my darling wife actually got me Need for Speed Hot Pursuit for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. I recall reading your review.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you haven't read my review, be sure to check it out on pixelverdict.com. It's full of wordly goodness.
It has words. And pictures.
And a lot of pretty pictures of expensive European performance cars exploding into shrapnel.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it.
And, you know, I one quick little aside on it. I was kind of wondering who was going to win the Battle of the Emo Band opening between, because Gran Turismo 5 opens with My Chemical Romance.
Yes, it does.
And Need for Speed Hot Pursuit opens with 30 Seconds to Mars. And oh, amazingly, whenever I hit the start button before the Vienna Boys Choir comes into it.
I'm starting to worry about Jared Leto, man. I'm starting to wonder if he's got a thing for young children, you know?
Yeah, I think this song was from their first album before he became a pederast.
Oh, okay, so there's no youth choir.
No.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, you know, I understand what you were trying to do. I understand you're trying to sound epic. But when you do it in every song, it doesn't sound epic anymore.
No.
Stop with the boys choir.
Well, he's trying to land in movie trailers, see?
And it's working.
He wants every single one of his songs in a movie trailer.
Well, he had that one that was in Dragon Age. That was pretty awesome, though.
Yeah.
But that also had a youth choir.
Now, the problem with the one from Need for Speed Hot Pursuit is, you know, it just sounds like every band from the late 90s and around the year 2000, you know, Stabbing Westward and
Godsmack
and Fuel and all those. They all sounded exactly the same.
Oh, okay, very good.
Yeah.
So, thumbs up for Need for Speed.
Two big thumbs up for two Need big for Speed. I won't tell anyone here that it's a better race than Gran Turismo 5, but it is.
I do have two little bits of news that I wanted to touch on that came out this week. I wanted to see what you thought of this, John.
Okay.
Number one, there's a little controversy brewing. Speaking of Call of Duty, there's a little controversy brewing in PS3 Call of Duty land. Apparently, between two significantly, like, you know, high-profile Call of Duty games, between Modern Warfare 2 and Call of Duty Black Ops, the online is apparently in shambles. And one Activision, well, I can't say Activision representative because it was a customer service rep who responded via email to someone who was rather perturbed about the lack of ability, I guess, to play Call of Duty Black Ops online. I believe it was a lag issue or, you know, they were having several issues. And the ticket for support had been opened in early December and they only received a response this week, which right off the bat is ridiculous. And basically, they were told, for all intents and purposes, by Activision's customer support rep to bleep off. And then when the matter was pressed, this turd polish responded with basically, you know, the quote-unquote legalese mumbo-jumbo, which states that, well, if you're not satisfied, yada, 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 it's not our problem. Activision reserves the right to terminate the service without any notice. So basically, you know, they told him, you know, if you don't like it, we can just stop doing it on PS3. Which, you know, ranks, to me, way up there in the douchebaggery levels, you know. And I don't know if this was a customer support rep who, you know, just wanted to get some annoying asshole out of his face, or if this was, like, someone within Activision actually kind of, you know, trying to drop a hammer on a PlayStation 3 player. And the other issue with over in Modern Warfare 2 land is now that the PlayStation 3 security has been compromised, yay, hackers have run completely amok on the Modern Warfare 2 servers, turning them into what I believe one Infinity Ward insider referred to as a completely unplayable mess. And Activision has no plans to do anything about it. What do you think of this, John? Like, I mean, this is, like, basically Activision is taking the back of the hand and slapping the taste out of the mouth of PS3 owners.
I think, honestly, the company's hubris never ceases to amaze me. I really should stop being surprised by, you know, the arrogance I hear coming out of Activision.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm always surprised whenever I hear how far they're willing to, you know, how pissy they can get.
Yeah, and I mean, what amazes me is there hasn't even been any damage control. You know, like some Activision exec hasn't come out and said, yeah, these people were speaking out of turn and their jobs are now toast. Or, you know, like there hasn't been any kind of spin or damage control put on this at all. It's just been matter of fact, you know, yeah, we're going to shaft PS3 owners.
Well, basically, you know, it smacks to me is we already got your money. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, I mean, what's Black Ops and Modern Warfare 2 were the highest selling games on that particular console for those two respective years.
Yes.
You know, like, I don't know, man. To me, it seems like, you know, you're taking, I know it's not quite half, but it's a good chunk. It's at least a third, maybe almost close to half of your user base and telling them to go work something up themselves.
Yeah.
You know, like that to me is just entirely unprofessional, entirely uncalled for, and entirely amateur. You know, like, obviously they have...
The wheel always turns around.
Yeah, obviously they have the resources to do something about it. Obviously, like, you know, this is Activision. This is the biggest video game company in the industry. These guys have the resources to throw at this problem and make it go away.
Yeah, but you saw how I'm still not over the shuttering of Bizarre Creations.
Well, I mean that was ridiculous as well. But I called that as soon as it was announced that Activision bought them.
Yeah,
I said 2 years, they're gone. You know, and I mean I think they got 2.5 years, but
I mean these guys put up what should have been two very high profile releases. For Activision,
yep.
the one that still astonishes me, I don't know how much money Activision paid for the 007 license.
Yeah,
that's got to cost a pretty penny.
Yep.
I mean, you're looking at a franchise that is worth billions,
and they didn't even try to sell it. You know,
the only movie franchise out there that is worth more than James Bond is Star Wars.
Yeah,
right. This, I'm sorry, Harry Potter fanboys, but 007 rakes in more cash.
Yeah, and Bloodstone is not a terrible game.
No, but they put no marketing into it.
No.
No, I mean, I didn't even know, I started seeing stuff on Bloodstone probably about a month before it hit.
I think it might have been about 2 months for me before, like, when they announced, I think it was announced in, like, August. And then, like, when I saw it show up on pre-order lists for October, I was astonished. I was like, what, now? I thought next year, you know?
Like, and let's be honest, you know, it wasn't an astonishing game.
No, it wasn't. I mean, it was a fairly middle-of-the-road shooter, but it had elements that were really well executed. You know, it was a good game. It wasn't a great, amazing, fantastic, trend-setting game, but it was good. You know, it wasn't horrible.
So, word to the wise, Neversoft, the guys who were doing the now flagging Guitar Hero franchise, save some cash.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Raven Software, the guys who do their X-Men games, save some cash.
Apparently, they're doing the next James Bond.
Yeah.
Which was put on hold until the new movie was announced to be going ahead, and now apparently that's on again, so.
And let's see, what's another. Who made Singularity?
That was Raven.
That was Raven. There, yeah. See, there was a game. Singularity, to me, was on par with Bioshock.
And Singularity was their baby. Singularity was a pet project for them. You know, this wasn't like Wolfenstein.
But because it wasn't called Call of Duty Singularity,
yeah.
There was no marketing. No, if Activision had flexed some muscle behind that game,
yeah.
Got some commercials out there, because, I mean, Singularity was great.
It was a good game. It was. It was a solid effort, and it could have sold well in the late summer or early fall period. It could have sold well. You know, instead they dump it into June or July, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just, I don't know. I don't know what they're into. And, I mean, you know, they hinge stuff on things like Prototype 2. Prototype 1 was met with mixed, like, mediocre reviews at best. And you know, and they come out and they hype Prototype 2 over a year before it's to get released. You know, it's like, guys, what the hell are you thinking? You know? I have to wonder what's in the coffee over at Activision.
Personally, I think the guys are going on their own forum board.
Yep.
Their own website's forum board and are, you know, drinking in their own magnificence. And then, because, I mean, like, I still could not believe, I think it was about 3 weeks before the Game Awards this year, they were hyping that friggin' killyourmentor.com.
Yeah, kill your creator or whatever the heck it was, you know.
Yeah, and then you, what do they give you? They give you this half-assed Prototype 2 teaser.
That had more footage from Prototype 1.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I was discussing it with Brian today. Myself and Brian were talking about it, and, you know, he's in the extreme minority. He still plays Call of Duty, and he plays other games. But I pretty much, like, I've come to the conclusion, and, you know, if you're out there, people, you know, Call of Duty fans, if you want to correct me, go ahead. But I truly, honestly think the industry is pretty much shaped right now by people who play Call of Duty and nothing else, and people who play everything else but Call of Duty.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of overlap there. You know, I don't talk to many people who play other things and Call of Duty, you know? Like, it's kind of like the World of Warcraft, you know? Like, I don't play video games, but I have a colossal WoW addiction, you know? Like, it almost reminds me of that same whole thing.
Yeah, I got news for you. You're playing a video game, and there's a lot better ones out there.
Yeah, I don't even want to say there's better or worse. I don't even mean it that way, but
there's more flavors
out
there.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, like, okay, Brian's big thing. Brian feels, you know, that maybe this is it for Call of Duty on PlayStation 3. Maybe next year, you know, maybe in the fall, it's going to end up being an Xbox exclusive. Does that really hurt Sony when you think about it? You know, like, I mean, okay, fine, we won't have a new Call of Duty next year. But all of us other people who don't really play it anyway will have, you know, Uncharted 3, which has a very robust multiplayer. We'll have Killzone 3, which also is going to have a very robust multiplayer. We'll have Battlefield 3. You know, like, there are alternatives. We don't...
PS3's still getting Bulletstorm, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yeah, Bulletstorm's...
Well, there you go, Cliffy B's new baby.
But I don't really know how much of a multiplayer side there is to Bulletstorm. You know?
I know, yeah. Now, I do believe there is some multiplayer in it, but I think it, basically, it's kind of like a Smash TV scenario. It's just a few players, you know, get thrown out. They're kind of like a horde mode from Gears of War.
Okay, gotcha,
you know?
Yeah.
It's a small group of guys, and, you know, you've got to score so many, what do they call them, skill kills or something?
Yeah, skill chains, skill shots, whatever. I'm still on the fence with Bulletstorm. Bulletstorm's going to be a rent first, and then see where it goes from there. Game for me.
That's probably the same with me. But I am going to get a little bit of enjoyment out of it.
I think I'm going to laugh at it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, like, the thing
keep your fingers crossed. You might get a new Borderlands.
Yeah, I mean, people, like, to PlayStation 3 gamers, I guess the message is, you know, I hope you don't lose your Call of Duty. I really do. I hope Activision are not that goddamn stupid. But, on the other hand, hey, we have alternatives. And we have good alternatives. In some cases, like, to some people's tastes, better alternatives. So, you know, is it something to panic about? I don't think so. But is it douchebaggery of the highest order from Activision? Yes. Yes, it is. The other big news out this week came out this morning, actually, and, I was kind of hoping Adam would be around so I could get his opinion on this one, but, you know, I'll throw it out there anyway. March 27th, 2010, Nintendo 3DS.
2011.
Or 2011, sorry, my bad, 2011. That's all the, you know, Christmas chemicals. But, yeah, 2011, March 27th, 2011, at a price of $249.99. It's pretty fast. It's a pretty quick turnaround. It's about what I expected. I was thinking April or May, but... You know, hey, if the games are there, good for Nintendo. Good on them, you know? What do you think?
I'm actually pleasantly surprised with the price. That's about what I paid for my PSP in 2006. Right?
Yeah.
Actually, no, maybe the PSP was $199.
I think the PS3 was a little more expensive. I think that started at $299.
What? Yeah. But anyway, no, I was pleasantly surprised with the price. On the other hand, and I'm really impressed with the fact that they've got a launch window of about, I think, between 25 to 30 games.
I think 10 was the number they kicked out today for launch day.
Yeah, for launch, but I mean, by June.
Yeah, they say by E3 or something, they say 25 games or something.
25 games out there?
Yeah.
That's impressive. I looked at the list. There's not a whole lot there that interests me as a gamer. But I would be, you know, I rag on Nintendo quite a bit, but I don't wish anything but success on a game company. The more success companies get, the better product we get.
For sure, for sure.
Right? I don't wish any sort of failure on Nintendo, and I'm sure the people who are going to be lined up to get the 3DS on day one are going to be extremely pleased. I would have, I don't know, what is Nintendo, they've made the same mistake since the GameCube, you know? You guys have got some franchises that people will lap up anything you release with them.
Yep.
Right? Get those out as your launch titles. You know, you launched the GameCube with Luigi's Mansion, look what that got you. You launched the Wii with a new Zelda game. Right? But I was looking at, you know, the first 3DS game I ever saw and, you know, people went nuts about was that that Kid Icarus game, right? This is something Nintendo fans have been clamoring about since the late 80s, and that really should have been there for launch.
I agree, but it's Nintendo. Their AAA stuff, their home franchises, I find they generally kind of hold them for, you know, the post-launch window. I think, and I really think that's to maximize units. I think they want to ride the hype for the first few months and sell as many systems as they can, get the install base out there, and then, you know, release a big one and then watch the sales double and watch the game sell crazy.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good business practice.
Well, I mean, if it works for them, it works for them. I can't really say it's good or bad, because I don't really know what the results are like. I guess I've never really had enough of an interest in Nintendo to care.
No, I find since the N64, really, Nintendo have kind of taken on this. You know, you'll see a fan who all they have is a Nintendo system. They're waiting 6 to 9 months in between a decent release.
And they're pathetic, horrible, sad, lonely people.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me of the golden age of N64 platformers.
There was one game.
Yeah, where you played one game for a year and waited for something else.
One game for a year. You played Super Mario 64 until 1999 when Zelda came out.
Was that 1999?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
The system was like 4 years older.
Wow. Oh, my God.
So, you know, for 4 years, the only game...
I thought it was the same year as Metal Gear Solid.
No, Metal Gear was 98.
98? Well, that's not much better.
No. But, I mean, the other side of it, too, is, you know, like... I mean, the PlayStation...
Shit, the Sega console owners get more love than that.
But, I mean, you know, I never understood it. I've said it since, you know, day one, since my very first episode of Blast Processing. I've always said it. I'll never, ever understand the mentality of the Nintendo fanboy. Ever. Like, it just boggles my mind how people could put up with so much abuse and disappointment and still be so blindly loyal.
My husband only beats me because he loves me.
Exactly. You know, do I need to take you somewhere? Do I need to take you somewhere tonight? Like, do I need to take you to a shelter? Poor battered Nintendo user, you know?
There's people out there who... you know, who can help you.
Yeah, and I mean, this was supposed to be Ninty's year, you know. This was supposed to be, after E3 2010 was supposed to belong to Nintendo, and it just didn't materialize, man.
No. Well, I mean, they showed off all those, it was E3.
Yeah, it was E3, yeah.
Super strong showing.
Yeah, and it was just, you know, I felt so bad at the end of the year for, you know.
The only game they released in that window that was actually worth anything was Donkey Kong.
Yeah, and I mean, Donkey Kong was great, but...
Yeah.
Again, you know, it falls into the old Nintendo trap. Let's just repackage something old. I mean, the gameplay was classic Donkey Kong Country, which was great. I mean, that was what I wanted, was classic Donkey Kong Country. And that's what it was. But, you know, after 4 days, I was ready to move on and play something else.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, look at that, Gran Turismo 5, shiny cars, you know? Like, it was just, I don't know, and it seems like that's Nintendo's style. I mean, everybody's all hyped over Kid Icarus now because, holy crap, Kid Icarus! But, you know, it's going to be a Panzer Dragoon clone. It's going to be a rail shooter.
Yep.
You know, so, I mean, how much interest is that really going to hold? You know, how much of a shelf life is that game really going to have?
And I'm sure the reviews are going to be great for it.
Well, it's a Nintendo product, so it's going to score nines.
Yeah.
You know, but, I mean, does it deserve them? Not necessarily, but it'll get them, you know. I don't know. I'm still not entirely sold on the whole 3DS thing, this whole 3D without glasses and yada yada. I can't.
Blink your eyes really fast.
Yeah, yeah. But, no, I think, you know, when the 3D fad dies, and it will die, I have to wonder where the 3DS is going to end up, you know? I think it's going to, like, the first year is going to be great. First year, everybody's going to sing its praises. It's going to sell millions. It's going to do so well, blah, blah, blah. But after that first year is over, you know, after people have gotten their Kid Icarus and, you know, their port of Metal Gear Solid 3 and their Resident Evil Mercenaries and whatever else, you know, like, what happens after that, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, dude, I've been enjoying Metal Gear Solid 3 for 6 years.
Yeah, well, you know, I played it 4 times now, you know. I don't think I can play it again, especially on a portable system, you know, with a single analog stick. Didn't Sony make that mistake with the PSP, what, 3 years ago? 4 years ago?
Jeez, man, that was 2005.
Yeah, there you go. 5 years ago. Almost 6 years ago.
The difference is with the 3DS, people aren't going to complain.
No, of course not, because it's a Nintendo product. There will be no complaining.
Man, there's a Nintendo fanboy out there sharpening up a knife right now.
I really don't care. No. Nerf knives don't hurt me, John.
Well, that's right, yeah, a real knife would be rated M for mature.
That's right. Moving on, we didn't really get to do the big year-end extravaganza that we had planned. You know, we had lofty ambitions, and for that, my dear listening audience of 6, I do sincerely apologize.
Sorry, Mom.
Yeah, sorry, Mom. You know.
I was in the hospital.
John was in the hospital? Okay, apparently. John was in the hospital. I was...
Yeah, dude, the baby, man.
Oh,
the baby.
Yeah, yeah. I was hanging out behind a dumpster smoking crack.
Playing Jack's smoking crack.
I was hanging out behind a dumpster playing Jack's smoking crack, trying to deal with the pressures that come with Christmas and family life, you know. So it was... It was an interesting busy season, and it just didn't happen. We apologize. We're sorry. But, you know, we'll regale you. We'll entertain you. We've picked, I believe, a top three each, haven't we, John?
We have.
And, yeah, we'll here we go. Here is the official, unofficial Pixel Verdict top picks of 2010. Drum roll. That's a shitty drum roll. John.
Get two pencils, man. So are we gonna do this like I do three, I do my three, and then you do your three, or are we gonna do like I do my number three, you do your number three, I do my number two, and
I don't know, it's blah, blah, blah. It's your ass, Cochise. How about 1, 2, 3, then go? No, okay, we'll do.
All right, I'll tell you what, I'll do.
You do your three, I'll do my three. You do your two, I'll do my two. You know.
Okay.
Yeah, that works for me.
There we go.
Yeah. Number three.
Number three for me. Darksiders, Vigil Games for PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360.
And that PC.
And PC. That would have sounded so much better coming from Claudia Black. Darksiders.
Everything sounds better coming from Claudia Black.
And like with Darksiders, you know, you had Joe Madureira, one-time rising star in the field of comic book artists, and a long-time joke for his controversial decision to ditch that success when he was at his peak and answer a calling in the games industry, returned after what can be only described as a decade of defeat. I think every game he worked on prior to Darksiders went under.
Yeah, probably.
Yep. Returned with Vigil Games to deliver 2010's first AAA title.
And when did he deliver it?
I believe that was pretty much within the first week of January.
January 6th.
Wow.
On old Christmas Day. Merry freaking Christmas.
A game about the end of the world. But it was a jaw-dropping adventure in the vein of Legend of Zelda. Darksiders sent gamers on a 20-hour-long quest through the blasted landscapes and creepy dungeons of a post-Book of Revelations apocalypse to unseat the corrupt demon rulers of the destroyed Earth and restore the annihilated balance of all things. The game was great art design, a very muscular presentation, man. The graphics in that game are great.
They were.
And the game design, stellar. Absolutely stellar. It is the best Zelda game I've ever played. And besides that, who wouldn't want to deliver wrath upon quarreling angels and demons as one of the friggin' four horsemen of the apocalypse? Great game. I was actually playing it earlier tonight.
I saw. I noticed. And I gotta say, you know, I did dig Darksiders. It didn't quite make my number three spot. It was close. It would, if I were to post a top 10, it would definitely be there. Probably around number like 5, maybe number 6, I'm thinking.
That's a pretty lofty position considering all the good stuff came out
this
year.
Was a pretty blocked year. This was a pretty awesome year. My number 3, EA's return to first-person shooter combat, Medal of Honor. I think, you know, when I reviewed it, I gave it a perfect score. I gushed a lot about the single-player campaign. And I think, you know, my closing comments pretty much sum it up. EA's diligence in design, ambition, and chutzpah paid off in a huge way. Medal of Honor was nothing less than a triumphant return to the glorious highs of the franchise's early years. Elements of the gameplay were unique, innovative, and flawlessly executed. And the presentation is absolutely stunning. It was just, you know, the game was gorgeous from top to bottom. It wasn't the longest single-player campaign in the world. It took me maybe about 6 hours on hard to get through the first time. But it left me wanting for more so badly. You know, like, I just wanted it.
And the good wanting, too.
And in the best kind of way. You know, it had a satisfying, really awesome, engaging single-player experience that had no downtime. It had
kingly beards.
Kingly beards, tier one beards. It had, like, scenes that were so ridiculously intense that my hands were shaking. It had, like, a narrative through affair that, you know, I've never seen in another first-person shooter. The way the levels were connected, the way you switch back and forth between the different groups within the game, the way the story unfolded, the final scenes. It was a fantastically well-executed, well-presented game. And on top of that, it felt realistic. Something, you know, like, it wasn't about shock and awe. It wasn't about, you know,
Blowing up a space shuttle.
Yeah,
takes off.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't about blowing up a space shuttle or assassinating JFK. It wasn't about, you know, Russians invading the White House. It wasn't about a nuke going off and watching your character die in real time. You know, it was
actually, man, that mission I watched you and Dobbin play.
Yep.
Where the two of you basically got left in that little shack in the middle of the desert.
Oh, it was
surrounded
intense
on all sides by the tally.
Absolutely intense. Absolutely, yeah. Ridiculously intense. And then,
I just love that, you know, was it cancel that last command? We're done here.
Yeah, we're done. And then the music wells up and, you know, everybody's just screaming. It's chaos. You can't see a thing because there's smoke and dust everywhere.
And the way that mission traded off from, you know,
yeah,
and going from the guys on the ground to the gunners up in the helicopter, and then when the helicopter gets in trouble, all of a sudden you take over as Tier 1.
Yeah, the sniper up in the hills, and like every level of the game was linked like that. You know, like from that moment of the game right to the final scene, every level had a transition like that, and it was just so intense and so driving. You know, you had to get...
First game I've seen where, you know, a lot of times, especially, you know, I don't complain when a first-person shooter makes you play as one character.
No.
I love Jimmy Patterson.
Yep.
Right? But when Medal of Honor made you, basically, you got to play as an entire military operation over the course of that game.
Yeah, and the other side of it was, I mean, I've griped about it a million times with the Call of Duty games on the podcast about how Call of Duty used to be a series that was about honoring, you know, the fighting man and all of that kind of stuff, you know, like historical battles and Medal of Honor before that, of course. You know, it was always about paying.
In 1944, Hitler's war machine came up against the one thing it couldn't overcome.
Exactly.
A few good men.
Exactly. And, I mean, Medal of Honor for me felt like a return to that style of gameplay. They weren't about trying to, you know, blow you away with Michael Bay set pieces or Hans Zimmer scores and stuff. You know, it was more about...
Well, everything, man. The packaging, the presentation, everything was handled classy.
Yeah, it was all about putting you into the boots of the man on the ground, and they succeeded brilliantly. On top of that, the multiplayer is just goddamn awesome. You know, and I mean...
I still love that. I still love that webcomic I saw with the... you know, when people started... When they had to change the Taliban to opposing force.
Yeah.
And I forget who it was. I think it might have been Virtual Shackles. Had the change the two teams to Hobbits and Muppets.
Yeah, yeah, it was him, yeah.
This was supposed to be a realistic military simulator, and you ruined it. This is why we can't have nice things.
But, I mean, like, I just thought, man, and, like, some of the gameplay mechanics, like the slide to cover and the quick pistol shot, and, I mean, it was all stuff, and, you know, it used the...
Does it still do the really cool... Do they still use the really cool...
The lean from cover, yeah, from...
No, I mean, the upgrading system that they did in Airborne.
That, not so much, no.
No, because I thought that was brilliant.
It was really cool, leveling up your character that way. In the multiplayer, it's done that way, and it is done really cool. You can go in and customize your weapons, tier 1 style and stuff, and I don't know if that's something that's in Call of Duty or not. It probably is, but I don't...
Actually, no, I did spend some time with Black Ops multiplayer,
yep.
And the way it works is normally with Call of Duty, you know, it's the same basic deal as Bad Company. You unlock new weapons. You unlock new weapons. With Call of Duty Black Ops... You earn credits, and you basically get to customize your guy's loadout as much as you want.
Oh, okay, right on, yeah.
Right, like you could have the sniper, and then have him carry a shotgun for when people get up close to that. But it made it feel more like a video game.
I hear you, yeah. Well, no, this was more. I mean, as you level up, you unlock. There are new levels of weapons you unlock, but there are also add-ons like you unlock double ammo and you unlock like red dot sights and that sort of thing. You know. The one thing that I wish would be ditched, and it was something that they borrowed from Call of Duty that does kind of frustrate in the multiplayer, is these goddamn offensive and defensive support actions. You know, you get a kill chain, and you earn mortar strikes and rocket strikes and this kind of stuff. And
fall on your grenade.
No, not even that stuff. It's not even the perks. This is like death from above, you know, like you could all be in one area, and all of a sudden someone starts spamming mortar strikes. So all of a sudden, like, magical mortars are just falling from nowhere and wiping everybody out, you know? And it's just, it feels cheesy, it feels cheap, and it's a way, like, to kind of instantly wipe out an area that people are trying to defend or that you're trying to defend, you know? Like, and it's, I never liked it. I didn't like it in Call of Duty 4. I don't like it here. But, you know, I understand they had to borrow, so be it, you know? But, I mean, like I said, visceral, intense, really well-implemented multiplayer, you know, and just that single-player campaign is one of the best campaigns I've played all year. It might have only been 6 hours, but my God, what an amazing 6 hours. How about your number two, John?
I had to actually change my number two prior to this because I have a feeling that you're going to be talking about my number two. Steve is going to be talking about my number two.
I ain't talking about your number two.
Within the next few minutes.
Who does number two work for?
I'm going to be throwing some sweaty man love that way when we start talking about that game.
Okay.
So my number two this year, and this might be cheating a little bit, but I think you'll let me go on this.
Okay.
The East relaunch.
Okay. Like,
by Falcom for PlayStation Portable.
Like East 7?
The entire shebang, man. East 7, Oath and Felghana, and the upcoming East Chronicles.
Okay, cool. Yeah, all right. Fair enough.
If you told me this time last year that I'd be yelling from the rafters to all who'd listen to the qualities of a PSP-exclusive RPG, I not only would have laughed in your face, I probably would have slapped you out of spite. You know, I'm a guy who bought onto the PSP, and it wasn't a Sony fanboy thing. I waited about a year before it came out, but it's just that in 2006, the PSP had an incredibly strong year. And it looked like it was going to be, it was the portable to have, and unfortunately, you know, the support started to disappear.
Yeah.
From it, right? I mean, I still got armloads of great games for it. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, not only am I shouting from the rafters about one PSP RPG, I'm doing it for two, and I have a third to look forward to now within the next few weeks.
Yep.
Right? It's a bit of a cheat using Falcom's 3E's titles. But not only have they and the North American publisher Exceed resurrected a long-dormant RPG curiosity, they've created a couple of perfect little portable RPGs. East 7 was nothing short of a masterpiece. great graphics, great music, fast-paced action, and great RPG gameplay. And that, in my opinion, Oath and Fel'Ghana one-ups it with a classier story and gameplay that feels just as tight.
Both were fantastic games.
Both were fantastic games. I love how they're structured, that you can sit down and play for 4 hours if you want, or you can sit down and play for 15 minutes on the bus. Right? They're just really well put together little RPGs. If you have a PSP and you enjoy a little bit of hacking, slashing, and some dungeon diving, grab these two classics before they're vanished, just like the ancient land of Ys.
Good stuff. They were great games. I can't deny you that one.
No, I thought that was the fact that it's one of my old favorite game series. You know, I have played every English version you could get of an Ys game.
Yeah, I've been there as well.
Yeah, and the fact that the series came back, and the fact that, you know, they threw PSP owners a bone.
I hope they get 4 and 5.
Yeah,
so I really do. I hope the PS2 versions of 4 and 5 get ported to the PSP and brought over by Exeed as well.
Yeah.
I'd love to see it happen. I already voiced a concern with them, and their answer was basically, if Falcom does it, we'd be honored to publish it, you know? So entirely up to
Falcom. I honestly know there was a bit of a stink kicked up when E7 was announced and it was coming to PSP, especially among, you know, the Japanese hardcore.
Yeah.
The ones who love this series, but honestly, I think it was a good choice.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think it was the best way to go. And the other side of it is the PSP is actually relatively successful in Japan, so, you know.
It's got Monster Hunter.
That's right.
Whatever has Monster Hunter in Japan controls all. Your number two?
My number two goes to a certain game about horses. That's right, Barbie Horse Racing Adventures. No.
Yes!
That wasn't released this year, no. That would have been my favorite game in, like, 2002, maybe, or 2001. No, Red Dead Redemption. Of course. Red Dead Redemption. I mean, how often have you seen such an amazing combination of technology, character, writing, execution, music, voice acting? Like, that game, I mean, I'm not one of the GTA 4 haters. You know, I know ever since GTA 4 came out, there's been this kind of this tiny vocal minority of assholes who love to trash the game. And GTA 4 was a marvel. GTA 4 was a technological fucking miracle. And Red Dead Redemption ups it in every way, shape, or form. Red Dead takes GTA 4 and just, you know, steamrolls past it. It was just such a beautifully executed game. I mean,
see, I thought you were going to say Red Dead takes GTA 4, drops one bullet in the cylinder, and just
pulls the trigger till it goes click.
Yeah.
You know, it executes.
John Marston will not return home without GTA 4, dead or alive. He doesn't care.
But no, it was, I mean, and that's a lot of it is Marston himself. You know, Marston was just such an amazingly well-realized character. And
so much could have gone wrong.
Oh, so much
could have gone wrong. With John Marston. Any other company would have botched John Marston.
And on top of that, like, I couldn't get over how much of an RPG vibe, like almost like a Bethesda vibe, the game had, like the open world setting, how open the exploration that it was, and how much stuff they crammed in there to do, like all the little side missions you could pick up, all the hunting treks, and, you know, like, it was just so...
The bounties and all
that
stuff.
Yeah, it was so ridiculously fully stacked with stuff from top to bottom. Like, there was never a point in that game. I mean, if you're bored playing Red Dead Redemption, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
You're doing it wrong.
If you're bored playing Red Dead Redemption, pick up the controller, stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Stop looking at a pause screen. You know, it was just such an incredibly well-realized game. It just... I gush over it repeatedly, and I mean, it was a really tough decision between that and my number one, which we'll get to shortly, but it was something that my entire time with it was riveting. You know, it was one of those games that you sit up and play till 4 a.m, even though you know you got to get up in 4.5 hours and get ready to go back to work. And then once you get the kids out of the door to go to school, you look at your watch, you realize you still got 1.5 hours before you have to get a shower before work, so hey, you play some more. You know, it's that kind of game. It was...
Any other developer, honestly, I believe, like, what I loved about it was, yes, it was the story of a man, you know, it was Red Dead Redemption. It was, but it wasn't the story of Marston trying to get out of his old, or trying to get out of his life of violence and killing. He'd already done that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This was the story of him trying to keep what he'd earned.
Yeah, it was...
Trying to deal with the consequences of that love, that old
life. Yeah, it was him, you know... And that's the thing. The story was just so deep and so well written. It was just...
Can you picture somebody else taking what is essentially a gruff-voiced, you know, 5 o'clock shadow, scar-wearing cowboy and mangling it utterly?
Well, look at Gunn.
Yeah, there you go.
That had Tom Jane. Tom freaking Jane. And Chris Christopherson. And Lance Henriksen. And that couldn't do crap. You know, that was supposed to be, you know, the first real Wild West game, and that fell on its ass.
Yeah, it did. You know? The gun was just poor, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, it had its moments, but the entire middle of the game was just an exercise in boredom.
I think one thing Red Dead Redemption did really well was kind of carving the story up and moving you to different locations.
They did shuffle you along, which was great. And I mean, like, the Grand Theft Auto games always kind of excelled at that too, propelling
you
forward.
Yeah, but it just kind of kept Red Dead Redemption always threw fresh stuff at you.
Yeah, it did. It did. And it was,
well, to tell you the truth, I would have bet you money that was going to be your number one.
Oh, I'm sure you would have. I'm sure you would have. And for a very long time, it pretty much was. But the more I thought about it, the more I had to go with my actual number one, which we'll get to after we hear about your number one.
Okay, this is going to be a bit controversial, and I'm sure I'm going to get people emailing me. I already have had people emailing me saying, why is that your number one game? Was that really the best thing you played all year? Yes, it was. Vanquish by Platinum Games for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360.
Nice. Inspired.
To me, Vanquish was the perfect blend of that modern Gears of War-flavored shooting action and just 1980s-style sci-fi insanity.
It was pretty awesome. And you know what? I know there's at least one other person on the Pixel Verdict crew who would probably agree with you.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think Mr. Johnson would have a smile on his face.
He converted after.
Oh, he was a fan. He was a fan of the Vanquish, yeah. And I think he would have a smile on his face hearing that that's your choice for best of 2010.
I just love, you know, the whole idea of taking on a besieged space station, overflowing with Soviet kill bots, robotic weaponry, while wearing a powered suit that, you know, basically puts Iron Man to shame, and all the while with boss battles against robotic tanks the size of skyscrapers. Awesomeness. Smoke break button.
And President Crazy Bitch.
And President Crazy Bitch.
Do not forget President Crazy Bitch. And, well, hey, smoke break button. Smoke break button. Single most innovative feature in an action game.
President Joan Allen.
President flew over the cuckoo's nest. But, you know, it's not. The game was just... It was.
And that's another one could have gone horribly wrong.
It is. It totally is. And, I mean, with the demo, I wasn't entirely convinced. But, you know, it's awesome. It is a great game. And, I mean, I picked it up immediately. I played the living hell out of it. You know, I did really enjoy it. However, I did finish Enslaved, and then I moved right on to, I believe it was Two Worlds 2. No, Castlevania, then Medal of Honor, then Two Worlds 2. So.
You had a busy fall.
Fall was ridiculous. Oh, and Arcania was in there, too. I went through Arcania at some point there, which was also a good game.
You went through Arcania at record speed.
I went through that really quickly, yep.
Yeah, faster than Enslaved, actually.
It was, yeah, and I mean, it was a much longer game than Enslaved. Arcania, I think, took me about 24 hours. But, you know, hey, RPGs, open world, longsword plus one Enslaved.
Also, I think Arcania was more of a, I can't put the controller down, than a, I just want to get this done.
No, it was more of a, I can't put the controller down.
Yeah, no, I mean, Enslaved was the, you know, I just want to get this done.
Yeah, it was. Enslaved was...
It's like when you're reading a book that you should be really enjoying, but it's frustrating as all hell, and you start, like, reading through the pages way too fast, and everything starts bleeding together.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. It was good, but, you know, Vanquish, awesome. Awesome game. Which leads me to my choice for the best game.
Number one.
My choice, and this is purely based on the fact that this is the reason that it became number one instead of number two. When I was finished Red Dead Redemption, I was very pleased with it. You know, I still enjoyed my experience with it, but I had no desire to immediately pop it back into system and play it again. I mean, I said, I know it's a game I will go back to. I know it's a game I will experience again. But at that point in time, you know, I was just kind of, yeah, okay, yeah, that was amazing. Now to put it on the shelf. However, Mass Effect 2 was a completely different experience for me.
When this thing goes up online, you should have the Mass Effect 2 theme come in as you say that.
Yeah, it was Mass Effect 2 from the opening sequence, which was one of the single most shocking moments I have ever seen in video game history. When the collectors appear from behind some kind of sun or something out of nowhere and just nukes the living shit out of the ship and crew that you spent the entirety of the first game with. And you watch yourself die in the opening freaking sequence. You know, like, you know you're in for a ride. You know that, like, what's coming is going to be, to quote Dr. Emmett Brown, some serious shit.
This is heavy.
It is heavy. It is definitely heavy. There is definitely a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull in the future. Mass Effect 2 was just, narratively speaking, the middle act was a little iffy. It was kind of a little bit of, you know, travel here, connect the dots kind of thing. But when the narrative kicked in, it kicked in huge. And there were some great, like, revelations dropped on you, but they were handled extremely well. They were handled really classy. I got the feeling right from the get-go, right from the opening scenes, that the decisions I had made in the original game really hinged on what was going on in the second one. You know, like, they really took what I did in that save file for Mass Effect 1 to heart, and it really changed the game I was playing, you know?
Well, your opening of the game was completely different than young Larry's.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. And it was just, it was one of those things where I just immediately thought, like, this is extremely freaking cool. And then to see the fates of some of the characters, because I think it was about 2 years had passed between, like, the opening sequence pretty much picks up right where Mass Effect 1 leaves off. But then, like, after your supposed death, there's 2 years or so that pass, you know? And just to see the fates of the characters and start meeting these old characters who you spent, you know, 25 or 30 hours in Mass Effect 1 with and seeing where they end up. And, I mean, in some cases, you know, like, with Tali or with Ashley, it was almost heartbreaking to see the end result because they don't end up on your crew and you don't end up using them in this game. And it's kind of, you know, like, oh, but come back, you know? And it's just the fact that the first Mass Effect was such a damn great game as far as storyline was concerned. But then Mass Effect 2 comes along and, you know, it evens it out a little bit. And, I mean, I do still consider Mass Effect 1 story a little better overall, but as a middle act, you know, Mass Effect 2 has got that Empire Strikes Back ending, it's got, you know, spectacle galore, it is probably the single nicest looking game you can get on the Xbox 360, it has some...
It's got female Vin Diesel.
It has female Vin Diesel, it has...
The green-faced assassin.
Yeah, Thane, the green-faced assassin. I mean, everybody in your group is basically a badass. You know, like, it is a collection of utter badasses, except for Morden, who is a dork. But, you know...
Well, but outside of Morden, dude, that... And I know a lot of people complained about the middle act of the game, where it's just, go listen to this guy's story and recruit him.
Yeah, and I...
Mass Effect 2 was a futuristic, intergalactic, dirty dozen.
And that story, man, those stories, those character stories were so... well told, like, just so freaking well executed, man. And just the fact that the game was such a visual powerhouse, I mean, it was a beautiful looking game. The exploration was still there to an extent, wasn't the same as the first one, but I mean, it was still there. It's still, like, you know, you still have the illusion of control. I mean, yes, you're still a puppet dancing to BioWare strings, the structure is still basically the same as every other BioWare RPG, but you had that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you still have that illusion that you're controlling your own destiny. And you can tell that there are so many moments compressed into this game where you made what seems like a simple decision, and it's going to come back to bite you on the ass in Mass Effect 3. Yeah. You know, like there are hard choices, there are tough calls, their like characters die, you know, this sort of thing, you know, like
it's not always easy either. It's not always spelled out.
No, it never is. And
it's not, you know, a light side choice. And
yeah,
a dark
exactly.
Side choice.
That's part of the brilliance is it doesn't play the morality card. You know, it doesn't play the whole you're either good or you're evil. No, you're not. You're either, you know, Jean-Luc Picard or interstellar Jack Bauer. You know, it's. There, you know, it's a.
Whatever. I was going to say Han Solo, but Interstellar Jack Bauer sounds kind of cool.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, it's a game where you know it's a everything you do is a means to an end. It's not about whether you were good or evil. It's how you solved your problems, you know, and it will change things. It will change how you deal with things, you know, like it will change how you react to situations in Mass Effect 3. It'll change what situations are thrown at you, and that to me, like just as one example, this is one that's floating around the rumor mill. You know, one of the big things they always told it about the games is the relationships. In the first game, I had a relationship with Ashley. She was the human chick. She was pretty cool, you know. With the second one, you can. I think there are three or four options you have in the second one. However, if you exercise any of these options, there is no chance with a relationship with Ashley again in Mass Effect 3. However, if you don't, there's a chance that you and Ashley will hook up again in Mass Effect 3, interstellar soap opera style. You know, and I mean, I'm all over that. I think the fact that they've done stuff.
I have to go back and play through Mass Effect 2 again.
it's awesome. And I mean, the other side of it, the ending. I lost characters in that ending that broke my heart. You know, I had Garrus die on me my first playthrough.
Oh, jeez, not Count Garrus.
I did. Garrus died on me my first playthrough of the ending, and I was so upset by it. And I was like, ah, I got it. Ah. So I go back and I replay that ending thinking, okay, well, I know how to save Garrus. So I did save Garrus. I finished the game a second time, and Garrus was still alive. However, whereas I lost Garrus and one other person on my first playthrough, the playthrough where I saved Garrus, I lost five. One of them was Tali, who I also love. So now I got to try and finish the damn game again so that Garrus and Tali are both alive. You know?
Commander Shepard's playing favorites.
He is. He totally is. I don't care if Jack dies. Jack's a bitch.
You don't care. Okay, you don't care about Jack. I'm pretty sure you don't care about Thane, and I know you don't care about Grunt.
Grunt, I don't care. Morden, I don't care. Morden can die. He's annoying anyway.
But Grunt is like Dog from Dragon Age. You've got to save Grunt. Come on, Barkspawn.
And Adam has just appeared. I'm going to add. Mr. Arsenault, are you with us?
Hello.
Hey.
You're late.
Sorry about that, guys.
It's okay. Myself and John have both just dropped our top threes of 2010 onto the, you know, the weary, poor, unfortunate listeners of our podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I thought I'd bring you in just to add you to this conversation here. Adam, you got a top three you can lay on us?
God, what can I...
You can't say Cataclysm three times in a row, though.
What came out this year?
In 2010 or 2011?
this is the problem. Did I even play three games this year?
Okay, to recap, John, your top three were?
My top three were Darksiders.
Uh-huh.
The East relaunch game, the East games for PSP. Ooh. And number one for me was Vanquish.
And my top three were Medal of Honor, my number two was Red Dead Redemption, and my number one was the glorious, just finished talking about Mass Effect 2.
Which I'm sure would be my favorite if I could get around to playing it, but I never finished the first one.
Oh, come on!
I've had time management issues. okay. Yeah. All right, I can do this. Sure. No, this is all right. This is all right. I can do this.
I got this.
It's cool. I got it. All right. So, whatever.
Go for it.
Yeah. All right. So, number three for me this year would be Dragon Quest IX.
Ooh.
Yeah. Pulling out a Nintendo DS. I'm pulling out a DS game. I spent a lot of time on this, man. You know, and you know, you gotta figure the testament of a good game is the time you put into it, right?
For sure.
Because there's a lot of other games out there you could be playing, and if it sucks, you just kind of walk away from it and forget about it. But I mean, the last time I looked at the save state, it was like, you know, 87 hours or some ridiculous thing. So,
wow,
it was a good one. I had a lot of fun with it. Because, like, even when the storyline finished, it just kind of opens up this, like, open-ended recycled dungeon thing where you can just, like, you can raise your characters to, like, level 50 or something, but you can just keep going and keep going and, like, get them up to, like, 200 or some ridiculous thing like that. The story stopped. It's just endless dungeons and more monsters to fight, and it, like, recycles some of the classic bosses from the Dragon Quest series. So,
bit of fan service.
It was fun. Yeah, kind of. And, you know, it's a series I'm a fan of. I wouldn't say I'm a crazy diehard fan. I haven't chased down all the obscure, only released in Japan versions of the different games, but good times.
You haven't
learned, I had a lot of fun with
it. You haven't learned how to read kanji to keep up with your Dragon Quest addiction?
Hey. It's a Dragon Warrior addiction.
Yeah, let me tell you, on another occasion, let me tell you about the ill-fated college Japanese course that I took.
I believe we broached on that once before.
the one that I had to drop out of in shame because this one class was as much work as the other 9 classes I was taking.
You're just a lowly gaijin.
You have brought dishonor to your family name for generations.
Man, it's tough, man.
Number two.
I could talk about that. Number two is going to be Cataclysm, I think.
Okay.
I put some time thinking about that. It is definitely number two. It's not number one. Cataclysm's great. It ate up a lot of my time. It's, you know, you spend 6 years playing a game and then they go in and remake the whole thing from scratch. And it's pretty wild the amount of effort that Blizzard's put into just reworking basic things like, you know, quest progressions, breadcrumbs, A to B to C to D, like stuff you just took for granted. You know, you'd done the same quest, the same leveling over and over again with all these new characters you're making, and you take it for granted the fact that the storyline doesn't make any sense, and you just know that you have to go from this place to this place, but now they've kind of set it all up so that it's this one continuous arc, and you never have to really worry about where you're going, and it's really, really, really polished and well done.
I jumped on the Cataclysm gravy train, and I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I started as a night elf with a friend of mine, and we were just doing some night elf stuff, and then I started as a goblin with another friend of mine,
yeah.
And me and her, we've been doing the goblin thing, and it seems a lot more structured in how you move from region to region. Was it always that way? You know, like you kind of clear out one region, then move to the next region, and, you know, you can almost tell how much you've progressed by how much of the map you can see?
No, I mean, it was horrible before. And there'd be these quest givers in the middle of the woods who for 6 years, nary a single adventurer came by.
Nobody
even knew that they were there. Like, just the way that they've gone back and reworked everything so that by the time you finish moving around in one questing zone, it automatically has led you to the path to go to the next one.
So the gradual unlocking of the map was not an original feature?
The gradual unlocking of the map was an original feature, but it was there. You could go through starting areas.
Oh, okay.
And there would be corners of the map you never even went to because you didn't even know that you had to.
Gotcha.
Do you know what I mean?
Gotcha.
So they've thought it out so that by the end of it, you've explored everything, and you're ready to move on in this nice progression. And, like, the Night Elf, for example. I mean, there was, when you, leveling a Night Elf back in the vanilla days, I mean, you got to a certain point, you hit level 20 or so, 25, and you ran out of quests.
Ouch.
And you just had to instinctively know that you had to walk for 45 minutes and then journey to the other continent. Because you had run out of quests to do in that area, and you had to go to the other, you know.
So it's a little bit more of a guided tour now.
Yeah, and it's 'cause they're really trying to, you know, they put all this new content in with the expansion packs, you know. Burning Crusade came out, and they said, oh, 60, now you can go from 60 to 70. Come enjoy that. And then with Lich King, they said, oh, 70 to 80. Oh, yeah, it's great. And everybody's been so focused on that end game, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of said, oh, well, you know, we've really neglected the place where we started, and God, look how ugly all of those graphics are, and we could do a lot better now, and it's just, they've applied 6 years worth of knowledge and improvements and just conceptual concept upgrades to the old world, and you didn't realize how crappy the old world was until they remade the whole thing.
I'm sorry to interrupt, gentlemen. I'm actually going to disappear for just a minute.
Sure.
I'll tell you when I get back. I've got to heat up a baby bottle.
Go for it. It sounded like you fell down some stairs.
Did. How about, at least he's not heating up a baby.
How about number one?
Number one is easy. It's Red Dead.
Awesome.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost a no-brainer. I had more fun playing that game than anything, you know?
I hear you.
Just fun and epic and completely chuffed about the whole thing.
I wish I had
a save game right where I went to Mexico so I could just do it again and again.
I guessed about that one already, too.
And I've almost, I mean, it's a game good enough that I've almost broken up my brother's marriage because I gave it to him. You have to play this game. And he's just like, well, I don't know. I don't really feel it. I'm like, no, play it. And then I got a call from, you know, his lady friend, and she's just like, I hate you. I haven't seen him in like 47 hours.
So it was like you with Oblivion.
Yeah, I mean, he's just vanished into it.
So. It was like I said earlier, I said, you know, basically it's one of those games that you could stay up until 4 a.m. playing, even though you knew you had to get up at like 8:30 the next morning. And then when you get up and you get the kids out the door for school, you look at your watch and you say, hey, I got another hour and a half before I got to get ready for work. And you turn it on again. You know, instead of catching some extra sleep, you turn on Red Dead.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And, you know, even the multiplayer, which wasn't something that I gravitated towards because, you know, it's just, you know,
console multiplayer.
It's not my bailiff. Yeah, console. I suck at it. I mean, I think it's the real problem. You know, when you play a single player game where, you know, shooting things is your primary objective.
Yeah.
The game is as forgiving as you need it to be because you can just keep trying again and again. But when you get into a room full of, like, talented people whose thumbs actually are coordinated and they work properly, and they're, like, riding past you on donkeys with top hats and shooting you in the face from, like, 100 yards away. You're just kind of like, oh, I'm not having any fun.
Just the fact that you can ride around on a donkey with a top hat and shoot people in the face makes this the best game ever.
it's a lot of fun. And it's the multiplayer is designed in such a way where griefing is actually kind of hilarious. And normally it's not because griefing sucks, yeah. But like everybody's supposed to group together, like bandy together to like wipe out bandits from like entrenched points. And you can't really do it solo, so you have to get like a posse up and go around and go kill people. And it almost never works because the minute you get five or six people in a group together, everybody inevitably just starts shooting each other, and it's just
it's human nature.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you can't put a group of 13-year-olds masked by the anonymity of the internet
into a room together. Antisocial teenagers with six shooters.
On a slightly off topic, did you read Virtual Shackles?
I haven't seen it lately.
Oh, there's a Red Dead comic up right now.
Really?
And it's a good one.
But they're all good.
It's poignant because it's I'm glad to feel that I wasn't the only one who thought this.
I'm loading it right now. Okay, it's great.
Yeah, I mean it's only funny if you've played through it.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Back.
Yo. And you people at home listening can't see this because podcasts are audio, not visual. So you can't see what we're looking at
right now.
Which is awesome.
What are we looking at?
We're
You can't. It's audio.
Yeah, that's right, John. You can only hear our voices. We're looking at the latest Virtual Shackle strip, which is a Red Dead Redemption strip.
Oh, yes. I just saw that.
Okay, very good. You just saw that while you were heating up a baby bottle, did you, slacker?
No, I was looking at it before. So I was listening to your dulcet tones drone on and on about Mass Effect.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
What was Adam's now number on the side one?
Note, Adam's number one was Red Dead Redemption.
Okay.
That was an easy one. Although, on a side note, I kind of wish that I had played Assassin's Creed 2 last year.
Because
I just got around to playing it the last weeks.
It's a great game. It is a great game.
I had a lot of fun with that.
And I haven't actually even dug into Brotherhood yet. Which is why...
This is my prep work, my homework, my research project. Before I dive into, you know, Aspro, as they call it. nobody calls it that. But
Abstergo?
Yeah, and you know, having not played the first one, I don't think it's possible for the plot to have made any less sense.
Heck!
Then
you need the first one is good. Don't listen to the haters, damn it.
I must have because enough people told me to don't bother with the first one. It's just boring and repetitive.
Just wrong, so wrong on so many levels.
So I turn on Assassin's Creed 2 and I'm like, okay, I can play this, no problem. And then I'm immediately thrown into a continuing storyline. I have no idea what's going on.
The whole thing with Assassin's Creed 1 that I prefer to Assassin's Creed 2 is the assassin aspect of the game. You never really get the feeling in Assassin's Creed 2 that you're actually an assassin.
I just get the impression that I'm just a cocky Italian crazy person.
Exactly. You know, like, hey, Ezio, go kill this man. Okay, I do it, brother. I do it for you.
Yeah, you're just like, sure, no problem.
But in the first one,
it's like...
Ain't it nothing but
it's a like, it's like playing Grand Theft Auto 3. Where, like, you're just a silent protagonist, and people are like, go murder this guy and kill his family, and you don't even say anything. You're just like, nod, and just go do it. You know, like, there's no... You know.
The whole thing with the first one is there were 9 assassinations in the first one, and you had to kind of build some legwork. You had to kind of learn information about each of your targets before you could hit them. And this is where the side missions came in. But the unfairness of it, like, the unfair criticisms came, like, people saying, oh, all the side missions are repetitive and they're boring and blah, 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 blah. I loved them. I thought they were great. And I just loved the aspect that I was like, you know, I pickpocket a note from some guy and then I open it up in my little Animus menu and I could read it. And it was actually, you know, like details about this particular target and stuff. So I was learning about these people who I was going after. And, you know, like every one of the 9 targets in the original Assassin's Creed had character. You know, there was some aspect to them that made them infinitely memorable. And then the attack itself, like when you go back to each of the 3 cities had an Assassin's Bureau, where you had, like, an agent of the assassins giving you the go-ahead to go kill this target. And when you got your go-ahead, he gave you a white feather. And you take this white feather, you go hit your target, then you soak the white feather in his blood, and that was the sign that your mission was accomplished. That was badass. That was amazingly badass. And then, of course, when you kill the target, alarms go crazy, and you had to escape the city without being caught or killed, you know? So it had that more of a sense of... It had that real sense of infiltration and that whole, you know, you were diligently planning out an assassination on this very high-profile target and then getting the F out. Whereas Assassin's Creed 2, all the guys I was going after were nobodies. You know, I was like, who is this guy? He is a member of the Pachi family. It's like, oh, okay, right on. Whoever, you know, dead. Move along.
Well, I mean, it took 20 minutes to figure out that the most effective, you know, way to traverse point A to point B was murder everybody in front of you.
Yes. Exactly, and
yeah, because you just sort of walk in a room and they just throw guards at you and you just dispatch them.
You couldn't get away with that stuff in the first one. It didn't work that way. There was a lot more social stealth in the first one.
there was not a single point combat wise in which I feared for my virtual life.
Whereas the first one is more of an intense run. Oh God, run, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt more like a Solid Snake style badass in the first one, whereas in the second one I just felt like a goof.
but what an entertaining goof. I mean,
he was an entertaining goof. And I mean, the amount of the variety in the game was unbelievable. I mean, Assassin's Creed 2 was full of variety, you know?
Oh, yeah, and all the different kinds of missions, and, you know, you're flying around, next thing you know, you're completely giving the middle finger to, you know, history and flying around on one of Leonardo da Vinci's machines, and it's, you know, it was great.
Using bonfires in the streets of Venice as an updraft.
Yeah, and there's enough that, you know, the shamelessly anachronistic way they've built up this mythological Dan Brown inspired backstory of conspiracy and crazyism. It was awesome.
Yeah, and the building blocks for that are all there in the first one. Like, those were, you know,
yeah,
that was all present in the original. That, like, I mean, it was a true respect.
I was so excited putting together the little fragments of the truth, you know, the big video.
The crazy video.
And I'm like, oh boy, any minute I'm going to, and I watch it, and I'm just like, what the, okay.
I almost think that Ubisoft has kind of made it a sport now to just like, let's see if we can break people's brains. Let's just, you know, trying their damnedest.
Now I'm really curious about Brotherhood because having, you know, read some reviews and talked to some people who played it,
yep.
You know, the impression that it's kind of like what they would have done in Assassin's Creed 2 had they not like run out of time or something.
Yeah.
Where like even the way the story is, like, you know, you go through this progression of cities and then at the very end they're like, "Oh, and also you go to Rome." But you don't really get to go to Rome, you just see it in the distance.
Yeah, and then here comes Brotherhood.
And then here comes Brotherhood, where all of a sudden you're in that place where we teased you about.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it was going to be the next, you know, part of that continuing storyline.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about that, because maybe that's bad, but I also don't hear anybody complaining about it not being awesome. So,
and
sounds like it's a lot
I will say I did receive a note from Blair, who does grace our presence every once in a while on the podcast. Assassin's Creed Brotherhood was actually his choice for Game of the Year for 2010.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, he said he was concerned. You know, he went in with low expectations, but he was hoping it'd blow his mind like AC2 did, and he was afraid that the emphasis was going to be on multiplayer. But, you know, he says his worries were easily put aside when, after 15-plus hours, Brotherhood affected him just as much as Assassin's Creed 2 did. Everything that made AC2 great was expanded upon, and the combat was tightened, the economy system was expanded, and neat little additions like the Hidden Tombs and the Truth make a comeback as well. So, you know, there you go. There's Brotherhood in a nutshell.
Well, that's what I'm going to be, you know, playing.
I'm probably still going to be
playing. Well, you know,
I'm going to be playing Two Worlds 2 funny. Oblivion.
Yeah.
I'm going to close things out with a flip side of the coin. I'm going to touch on our one big crushing disappointment for 2010. One game, you know, that maybe you were really anticipating, something you couldn't wait for, something that was hyped, and you sat down to play it, and your response was just kind of, huh. You know, it doesn't even necessarily have to be a bad game, but just something that you were personally really disappointed with. Which one of you guys wants to dive in first?
I haven't talked for a while.
There you go.
I've seen my vocal cords still work.
Looks that way.
You guys wouldn't be that lucky. Big one for me of the year I was crazy excited about, and just, once it was released, it stank to high heaven. Final Fantasy 13. Yeah. How you follow up two of the best console RPGs of the last generation with one of the most soulless, robotic, empty, horrible Japanese comic booky dung heaps ever is beyond me. Like, you know, not only Final Fantasy 10 and 12, but I mean, some people would argue that 11 was a pretty damn good MMO. Not me, I don't play MMOs. But then, you know, Final Fantasy 13 hits, and it's, oh, I just did not know what to expect when 6 hours into playtime, it still feels like I'm playing a tutorial level. And none of the characters are at all likable.
I hear you. I too thought the plot was horribly weak.
Oh, what plot?
Yeah, well, there's that.
What plot? It's like a really, really bad episode of friggin' Bleach or Dragon Ball.
As if there's such thing, John. Gosh.
I don't know. Did you play FF13, Adam?
Well, you know, it's actually a really good pick. I wish I'd thought of it. So here's the story with that one. I bought it
okay.
for basically full price.
Yep.
I put it in. I played it for 10 minutes, got distracted by something else. See where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I see where you're going.
And then have spent the rest of, like, 6 months after listening to everybody trash it. So at that point, I kind of lost the enthusiasm to stick with it. And I'm looking at it right now. It's just sitting there, glaring at me. So it's actually a really good pick, because I don't... That's really the only game I bought this year that I never touched.
To me, it was... I didn't even mind the storyline so much. It felt like, you know, it might have gone somewhere.
Again, what storyline?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. It felt like it was laying...
It was Metal Gear Solid VR missions.
No, it felt to me like they were kind of laying building blocks for the first part of the game, and they were going to capitalize on it later on, maybe. But overall...
You never get out of Midgar in this Final Fantasy.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
That's the worst thing you can ever
there
say.
Is no end to Disc 1.
Yeah, no, I'm with John. I was pretty let down by Final Fantasy 13, but the biggest disappointment for me, and this is coming from someone who, you know, like, I wasn't a huge fan of the series to begin with, but I did have a lot of fun with 1 and 2, would be God of War 3. God of War 3 was, I don't know, like, you know, it was supposed to be this big epic conclusion to the trilogy, and it was supposed to be, you know, to be all end all for graphics and execution, and it was supposed to be these big gigantic...
Best action game of all time.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of hype, there was a lot of pomp and circumstance, there was a lot of, you know, shock and awe campaigns going on with the little quick demos and stuff, but in the end, it was just mashing the X and triangle button repeatedly, and there wasn't much of a storyline there. Well, there was no storyline there. It was just, you know, I will have my revenge! And it was, you know, that final showdown, which the payoff was absolutely horrible, and then the game was over.
He's been having his revenge for, like,
seven games or eight games now, I don't know. But, you know, it's just...
Yeah.
It's just, as a character, Kratos is completely boring and uninteresting. And they did nothing.
And they made him even more boring and uninteresting.
Yeah, with God of War 3, they did nothing. Like, I mean, the last time the character ever felt like a fully realized character and not just some plain, loudmouth, arrogant caricature was the first game. You know, and just after God of War 2 ended on such a freaking to-be-continued note, you know, I was just, I was hoping 3 was going to be the big epic conclusion, and it wasn't. All 3 was just fight scene after fight scene after fight scene. None of the creativity of the first two games was there, you know, like...
Every single character was completely unlikable.
Yeah, nobody was interesting. All the dialogue was banal. It was just, you know, like, I mean, yeah, the combat mechanics were the same as they always were, which is tight as hell, and the game looked pretty gorgeous, sure, but it was... I mean, you know, there's a problem when I'm more interested in the Conan game than I am in God of War 3. You know, I take THQ...
There's no reason for you to be doing that.
I would take THQ's 2007 Conan off the shelf, like, 4 times more before I would take God of War 3 off again, you know?
Would this highborn wizard die at the hands of a hillborn savage?
Yes!
Survey says, yes!
But it's, you know, it's just, I don't know, God of War 3, it left me feeling completely and utterly flat. I had more fun revisiting the first one with the God of War collection than I did playing 2 or 3.
Dude, I had more fun with the mediocrity that was Dante's Inferno.
I'd probably say the same thing, actually. I probably would.
And Dante's Inferno was nothing special.
No. How about you, Adam? You got a most disappointing choice?
That's a tough one. I like John's answer. I really do.
Final Fantasy 13. You're allowed to have the same answer.
You are.
It's 75% truthfulness and 25% desperate cop out, because, you know, I can't really think of any other games that I really disliked.
Well, I mean, in all honesty, that was my first instinct as well, was to go for Final Fantasy 13. I mean,
the fact that I couldn't even get into it, I mean, that's, you know, pretty rough right there, because I'll usually stick with a game for quite a while before I really...
That actually wasn't my first choice.
Really?
No, my first choice, I was actually going to go with Bayonetta.
Really?
Which is really ironic, because Bayonetta was a game that, you know, I own on two systems, and I I gave it a crazy high score review, but this summer during my long tenure of unemployment and when I was working on my house and living at my in-laws' place, you know, I started digging through a bunch of my old PS3 games just to maintain sanity. And, yeah, when I got back into Bayonetta, man, it was – when it's firing on all cylinders, it's awesome. But it's just got too much of that Devil May Cry, Ninja Gaiden, you know, empty, soulless corridors. And then you walk into an arena and fight a bunch of enemies and a boss, and then more empty corridors. You know, when the combat was going, game was amazing. When it was for the countless hours in between combat, I just couldn't skip through the cutscenes fast enough.
I hear you. It was a pretty weird game.
It was. Maybe that's why I love Vanquish so much.
It wasn't weird. It was pretty much straightforward madness.
No, well, I mean, there's, you know, transforming Soviet kill bots, but that's about as weird as
and it smoke break buttons.
And Joan Allen.
And President Crazy Bitch.
Yeah. And the bad guy who was a pretty much a carbon copy of the bad guy from Zone of the Enders.
I
only with an even more ridiculous sounding voice.
He was yeah he was a cool bad guy. He was pretty neat. Activision or Adam, you play Vanquish? No.
No, I didn't.
It's gone down in price.
Has it?
$39.99.
Well,
slow down time, rocket boosters in your feet, transforming gun.
Just like in real life.
Yes, exactly.
To check that one out.
It's definitely worth a look. And Enslaved has gone down in price now as well if you're looking for another awesome game to play.
Well, at least first half was awesome.
I enjoyed my time with Enslaved. I had one moment where I wanted to bash my television and pull my hair out, but other than that, I enjoyed it. On that note, that was our little discussion of the best and, I guess, the worst of 2010. I'm sure you'll want to come back next week when we start talking about 2011 again. Or for the first time, maybe, since we haven't been around for a while. But I'd like to thank John and Adam for joining me. And I'd like to thank you all for listening to me. Oh, and John, Sandra says hi.
Was Sandra there now?
No, she was on MSN, and she says hi. So I just thought I'd throw it out there, you know, for everybody else.
Beautiful. Tell her to check out my wonderful CD cover on Facebook.
I will. Best Facebook meme ever. Be sure to tune in next week when I'm sure you'll hear either John or Adam say,
"You gonna do something or just stand there and bleed?"
We out of here.